We welcome you all to our Saturday morning Bible study. So glad you could join us today. And Thomas from New York will be our moderator.
Well, hello and welcome, everyone. So we'll start out with our poem. Jesus' prayer for all his brethren. Father, that they may be one. Echoes down through all the ages, nor prayed he for these alone, but for all, that through all time God's will be done. One, the mind and life of all things, for we live in God alone. One, the love whose ever presence blesses all and injures none. Safe within his love, we find all being one. Day by day, the understanding of our oneness shall increase. Till among all men and nations, warfare shall forever cease. So God's children all shall dwell in joy and peace. So that's hymn 157. The words were written by Violet Hay.
Well, she had a clear view of the farewell discourse, didn't she?
Yes.
It's amazing how closely this corresponds to the whole thing. It's wonderful.
The hymn notes also say that she wrote this with special recognition of the mission of the Christian Science Monitor. It's interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell them how you found it, Tom, or that you decided on the topic, and then.
I'm sorry. You asked me.
Yeah, I'm asking you.
Okay. Well. Frankly, I wasn't sure what the topic was. And so for a few days, I just had no idea. But I looked at the lesson that was coming up and went through that. And I saw this section on John 14 and that famous statement, you know, let not your heart be troubled. We all love that. And then it talked about Thomas, when he was asking the question, how can we know the way? I said, so actually, I thought at first I would do something on Thomas, but that just didn't seem to sync up, you know. And so then I looked further and I thought, this section is in where Jesus is talking to the disciples after they finished their dinner, I guess, you know, at the Last Supper. And so I thought, why don't we talk about that? So that's the thought process of how I came to this. And I thought we would cover the farewell discourse.
Excellent.
And then, interestingly, I really love the hymns written by Violet Hay. And so I thought, let me start there. I will see if there's a hymn that might fit. And glory be, it's the words are coming right from the farewell discourse, you know, Jesus' prayer for all his brethren, Father, that they may be one. And I said, that's perfect.
Thank you. Yeah, I thought that was so beautiful. That was just the topping of it to find that hymn that goes so perfectly. And I was reading in one commentary, they said that this prayer is by far the greatest recorded in the Bible. And it is amazing. It's a wonderful thing to talk about.
Probably one of the contributions that John made, obviously from someone who witnessed it firsthand, and not only that, recognized what value there was in what Jesus did at that time. And then to think that he remembered this much of it and wrote it down for us, actually he wrote it down quite a number of years later. later. But the whole impact really stuck with him, and now we have it. Thank you, John.
I also like the way she uses, Violet Hay uses all 8 times in this hymn.
Mm-hmm. For all.
All, is that what you said? All?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. A-L-L.
Yeah, all time.
Safe
all.
Within this love, we find all being one.
Mm-hmm. All being.
Of God's children, all shall dwell.
Yeah.
Till among all men and nations.
That's right. All and injures none. Yep, that's a good, beautiful.
Jerry, you were going to say something.
I was just going to say, it's so interesting to me that this whole thing that we're doing the Bible study on came immediately after Judas left the room. And I don't know, I just think that's fascinating because I know I've been around where, you know, we've been able to have great conversations and then somebody gets in the room and it kind of like shuts it down. So it's just fascinating to me how that came to be. And how important that was that he left, I guess.
Yeah. No opposing and contending thoughts.
Yeah.
Well, and also, that's interesting because, you know, we have a record of a lot of Jesus' healings. In many cases, he had to throw people out of the room before the healing took place.
Yeah.
For that reason. Good point.
Yeah, and we had observed, I know Mrs. Evans would observe this in years past, when someone left the church, might seem at first sort of sad or upsetting or something, but usually after that person left the church, there was tremendous growth and a lot more peace and harmony. So, and that's how it should be. If someone isn't really right or part of the oneness, then they eject themselves until they're ready.
Yeah. In the case when Bruce said, they usually have opposing thoughts.
Yes.
You have to speak up if you want them to hear.
Yeah, it is an opposing thought, and God removes that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I found that. I'm sorry. I love this.
I was just going to say that was truth purifying. Truth is doing that, purifying and separating the what is right from what is not right.
Yep.
Yeah. Thank you. Chardy?
I love this, the being of good cheer. There's lots of things on it about overcoming the world. And on our website, if you look up overcoming the world or just put in this be of good cheer, you'll get an article by Bicknell Young. It's wonderful. I really recommend it.
What's the name of it?
Overcoming the world.
Oh, okay.
Speaking of, then this is, I just stayed with this for the Bible study a lot because what does this mean? And it's not yielding to temptation of the world and always by being faithful to God our Father. And then overcoming. Oh, your resistance to sin will increase as you are faithful to God. And it will get easier to overcome the world, which is material. This is the world. And then, let's see, it says, we're growing to love God and his beloved son more than you can love anyone or anything else. And that's overcoming.
Thank you.
It's great stuff.
So are we still on the hymn or are we?
Okay, so let me read a couple of things here. So we got here under the topic, the farewell discourse. The book of John is conceded to be the book of great spiritual meaning, especially the 13th to 17th chapters, which are devoted to one subject, the Last Supper. These chapters are of great importance to the students of Christian Science. And that's from the article on oneness by Bicknell Young. And I want to read you something else. It's from Barnes Notes on the Bibles, on the Bible. There is nowhere to be found a discourse so beautiful, so tender, so full of weighty thoughts, and so adapted to produce comfort as that which occurs in these three chapters of John.
Thank you.
So our first question, which we've already started talking about, but we can go a little more detail on it, is what, because maybe not all of us understand this, right, what it is, but the question is, what is the farewell discourse? What is it?
First of all, this is the first time I've ever heard of this as referred to as the farewell discourse. And I thought that was interesting. But one of the things that stood out, which you just read, was he knows what's facing him. And yet his whole purpose in this was to comfort his disciples.
Yes.
That was his whole thing. It's like, because he knew how they, you know, there was, as we've watched The Chosen, there were times where are they ever going to get this? But he knows he's leaving them. So he's preparing them for what they're about to see. But first he's trying to just, that love that he has for them, and that they to give them courage in what they're going to be needing to do after he's gone, and to assure them that he's not going to leave them. He'll always be with them, it was just incredible, the comfort. That was his main goal, and to let them know that he will come back to reassure them that he's never going to leave them in the ascension when he come resurrects. But it's just very profound. It was one beautiful how he was comforting his disciples.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, so that somewhere that it said that it refers to the final teaching and instructions given by Jesus to his disciples immediately after the Last Supper in Jerusalem, the night before his crucifixion.
Thank you.
Well, and perhaps the greatest comfort that he could ever possibly give anybody is his promise that the Comforter will come.
Yes.
Even the Spirit of Truth. In other words, you know, he's giving them sort of the final conclusion of his 3-year mission, and telling them that it's for all time, and even better things will come. And they have something to look forward to.
Florence?
No, I think he's also showing them by, you know, in action, the washing of the feet, service for others, you know, loving one another, all of that, he puts it in action as well. And it's a selfless love that he's showing them.
What is the farewell discourse? Yeah, I think it's been said, it's a summary of his mission.
It's an encouragement and comfort for those that he's leaving behind to carry on his work. And it's hard to describe in a sentence what the farewell discourse is, because it's so rich with meaning. And but like also has been said, the truths stated are for all time. That's why it's not just for year 30, but we're studying it here in year 2025, and it's just as applicable now as ever, and always will be.
Yeah, Bicknell said that in that article I was talking about, there's no such thing as the end of the world, and we'll learn that, and it will be revealed to us, and there will be no semblance or of the existence of the end of anything. It's always the Christ.
It sheds new light on this concept known as the end times.
Yeah.
What it is it's the end of error. It's not the end of existence.
And also, during his arrest, when the chief priest and Judas has already did their thing, arrested Jesus, that moment was very chaotic. We all knew what happened during that time, including Peter denying him. So there wasn't really, Jesus never had the time to do this with them. And I think that's one of the reasons why he came back. He could have continued his journey. But he thought it was important to come back to them and prepare them, because he hasn't actually done this. Because leading to his crucifixion, we saw what happened, the arrest, the accusations and the torture, everything that happened in the days after that, and of course the crucifixion that, yeah, you know what I'm saying, that happened afterwards. But Jesus thought it's important that he come back and prepare them, because this is it. All those 3 years of teaching, learning, following him, miracles, healing, this is it. It's time for you guys to go. But I'm not going to leave you guys. I'm not going to let you guys go, because there was fear among them, because they saw what happened to Jesus. They too, they knew. But if Jesus hasn't come back, I don't know what's going to happen, but it was important that he came back and prepared them, because he hasn't actually done that.
But Jesus never left them, because the idea of the Christ or the way shower or the Messiah was always there. So when we're looking at this, the divinity was always with them, and they had to acknowledge that and not just depend on the man in front of them that had always been close, but to see his divinity and their divinity, their oneness with God. And that could give them the chance to go forward.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, some religions think he's coming back on a cloud. And of course, we know the Comforter, he came back. It was science and health, with key to the scriptures. That's the Comforter. And I have to say, I feel a little like Karen when I read this every time. It's just like, oh my gosh, it's just so wonderful. And when I first realized that this prayer, it's for, like the hymn says, for all time, all mankind, he gave this prayer directly to you.
Mm-hmm.
He was praying for you now. He was thinking about you right now. And to me, the two emphases were on our oneness with God, which is a huge topic, which is why we have a subject on Doctrine of Atonement, and also the oneness with each other. And in looking at the history since his time, what was the big disruption always? Somehow we lost our oneness with the Father, and then our oneness with each other, all these factions and fighting and carrying on. I mean, what's with that? So this prayer is one we should incorporate in our lives often, to think about it. All the comfort. Yes, the comfort. And in my house, there are many mansions. He didn't say they're little huts. He said there are these mansions. And abiding, you know, to abide in him, to live in him, and then to produce the fruits that living in him results in. And the peace, he leaves us the peace and the joy that no man can take from you. It's just the most wonderful prayer. And to think he loved us so much, it wasn't just the disciples, it's for you right now, this very moment, all the promises. And God's promises are kept, as the hymn says.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I wanted to just give a recap of the farewell discourse, because there's a lot in here, and I could have come up with 20 or 30 questions, frankly, but that would have been ridiculous. So given the recap, so Judas left Jesus and disciples, and then Jesus now speaks to the 11 disciples. And he said, "A new commandment I give unto you, that you love one another as I have loved you, that ye also love one another." Then Jesus told Peter he would deny him 3 times. Then Jesus comforts his disciples. Then Jesus said he is the way to the Father. Then Jesus said he promised the Holy Spirit, or the Comforter. Jesus said he is the true vine, and the disciples are the branches. Jesus said to love one another as I have loved you. And then Jesus told them to, kind of as a comfort, right? The world hated me before you. Then he said the Comforter will testify about Jesus. And the disciples should also testify about Jesus. So Jesus said he would go away and the Comforter will come and guide the disciples in all truth. Jesus said he would go away and the disciples will grieve. But Jesus said he would return and they will rejoice. Then he ended it with praying. So he said, Jesus asked God to glorify him. Then Jesus prayed for his disciples. And then Jesus prayed for the disciples and all who believed in him. Jesus prayed that all may be one. Okay, so that was a quick recap. There's a lot in here. And maybe we should just move on to the next question, which is in our lesson this week, is what is the answer to Thomas's question, how can we know the way, which is in John chapter 14, verse 5.
Well, I think by watching and praying, by abstaining from the thoughts that we know are not really good and not a part of us, and that's how we start out. And then when we sincerely ask God and trust in him to tell us, then we can know the way.
Thank you.
Well, Jesus gave us some clues. And Mrs. Eddy gave us some clues, right? Jesus gave us some clues. He said to follow his example and to obey his commandments. Mm-hmm. And he also said to study the scriptures. And Mrs. Eddy says to follow the Christ, to understand the science behind everything that Jesus said and did. And that's what his disciples were struggling with. You know, because every time he said, he referred to himself in the Bible, I am the way, it wasn't a personal reference to him. It wasn't just a personal reference to him. It was a reference to the Christ, as Mrs. Eddy explains, that animated him. And by understanding the Christ, which animated Jesus, and obeying the commandments, in other words, allowing the Christ to animate you, me, that is how we know the way. It requires humility, which is cleansed in prism. Mrs. Eddy says, love for God and man is the true incentive, both healing and teaching.
I thought it was interesting. It seemed like at first it was a physical thing that they were thinking about and being with him. But as you're talking, it's a lifestyle and how we live, and it doesn't require him to be there.
But, in person.
In person, right?
Well, the manual describes Jesus as the exemplar, the one that set the example. And even he said, I can of my own self do nothing. And yet imagine the things that he did do that are recorded in the Bible, which is only a tiny fraction of all he said and did. And then here in the farewell discourse, he's talking to God, says, I and you and you and me. So obviously he's referencing this presence of what we call God, the great spirit of goodness that you can't see with your eyes or hear with your ears or reach out and touch it with your hand. And yet it is ever present and all power and does all things that are good. And Jesus was the vehicle or the avenue through which this great power of goodness operated. Same thing is true with each and every one of us, and that, I believe, is what Jesus is trying to drive home with all of them. You turn to your Father as I have turned to him. I've set you the example for 3 years now. I've always turned to God. Now it's your turn to turn to this great spirit of goodness and get your direction and illumination from him directly. And once that's established, there's no limit to the good that can be done.
Thank you. These are a couple submissions from Carrie. The one is from a 1900 Sentinel. The Bible rings with one long demand for obedience. The key word of the book of Deuteronomy is observe and do. The burden of our Lord's farewell discourse is, if we love me, keep my commandments. We must not question or reply or excuse ourselves. We must not pick and choose our way. We must not think that obedience in one direction will compensate for disobedience in some other particular. God gives one command at a time. If we obey this, he will flood our souls with blessings and lead us forward into new paths and pastures. But if we refuse, we shall remain stagnant and waterlogged, make no progress in Christian Science experience, and lack both power and joy. So you can ask yourselves, you know, if you're not having the success that you think you want, how devoted are you to these commandments, and not just to follow them dutifully, but with joy, with your whole heart, with eager expectation, with the spirit behind it, all these things, not just drudgingly, dutifully going around, but with the joy of the Lord in you. So that's why, you know, what was read from obedience, that chapter on obedience that Craig read Wednesday night, never absent from your post, never off guard, never ill-humored, never unready to work for God. And it says never, you know, not sometimes.
And non-negotiable.
Yep, non-negotiable. We can all, I think, do better.
I like Mrs. Eddy's also hold thought steadfastly to the enduring, the good, and the truth. I like that because that also helps us to know this way, to follow what Jesus has done.
Yes.
But I thought when we talk about the post, when Jimmy said no negotiable, I was just thinking about sometimes people
speak feel, up again.
Yeah, people feel like, yeah, somebody else will do it for me. I don't have to occupy my position. I will vacate that or just not do anything, stagger like you said. Or somebody else, let somebody else do it for me. But if you don't occupy your post and you don't do it, what is required of you, nobody else will do it for you. Because we have this thought going on, people think, oh, somebody is taking it from me. It just cannot be taken from you. It's your position, it's your post, it's your it's what God required of you. It's either you do it or you're not doing it. The thought that somebody can take it from me is just not true.
Thank you. That's right. No one can take your position if you're doing your position. It's uniquely yours. But if you're not doing it, yeah, it's not, you get it taken from you. It's not really taken from you. You've relinquished it by not doing it. So you either do it or not. And if you know that it's given to you by God, you'll have all that you need to do it. And every respect, of course, no one can take it from you.
And I remember when I first came here after a little bit, I was writing things, different notes down from what I learned here. And one of them was, nobody's going to swoop in and save you. You know, and the idea that someone will, you know, Jesus or the Jews thought the Messiah would come in and do it, that's just old theology. You know, mm-hmm. Jesus is trying to let, and Mary Baker Eddy too, they're trying to let us know it's you. You got to go to Christ. You got to do this. So
thank
you. Important to be accountable.
Absolutely.
So I wanted to mention a couple fundamental concepts. Because I think sometimes in Christian Science that, and maybe I'm talking about how other books people have written about Christian Science, they get too deep in terms of how to understand and demonstrate Christian Science, and they kind of like seems almost too intellectual. But Mary had brought up about the commandments. So Jesus said, if you love me, keep my commandments. So if we're really struggling with something, or, you know, some things don't seem to be working out, or we feel unsettled or something, I mean, it's a fundamental concept that, well, okay, when I don't know and what to do, I need to be obedient, right? And then the understanding will start coming, you know? And the other concept I wanted to mention was, it's kind of how we started out with Violet Hayes' poem, right, is that, you know, when we're struggling with something, like sometimes to break the mesmerism, we need to sing or listen to a hymn or read some poetry, and that'll help break the mesmerism. But I just kind of want to mention these two basic fundamental concepts because, you know, we're... Well, anyway, this is about being overly scientific about Christian Science. So let's just keep this down to basics. You know, be obedient, sing a hymn, and progress will be made.
Thank you. That's a really good point. And that was one thing, again, I would observe with Mrs. Evans when she would feel under attack. Well, sometimes she would go in her study and write a lesson. But at other times, she would get the heck out of Dodge. She would not just sit around and pray. She'd get up and go out to lunch or go shopping or do something to get out and break the mesmerism. You can get so bound into just thinking you're going to pray. In the meantime, you're making a reality out of the whole thing. So breaking the mesmerism is very important. And Mrs. Eddy has said, yes, you either have to get angry, cry, or laugh. I prefer laughter. Anyway.
I know you mentioned the word deep. I'm not too fond of the word deep. If it's not simple and clear, it's not right.
Yeah.
Like that word, sued. Mm-hmm. Sued.
Yeah. Here's one other from Carrie from an article, The Healing Truth. In reply to the question of Thomas, how can we know the way? Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me. The life of Jesus demonstrated healing through faith in God, right thinking, right acting, right living. It was a manifestation upon the plane of mortal existence of the supremacy of divine principle and law. He demonstrated man's immortality by commanding Lazarus, come forth, and evidenced his faith in God by the words, Father, I thank thee that thou hast heard me. His life expressed obedience to the law of love, and on the cross he revealed his knowledge that ignorance of truth was responsible for mortal error when he said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. So it's just bringing out, you know, he lived the words. He lived the words.
And I found this in No and Yes, where Mrs. Eddy says, Jesus declared himself, namely, the way, the truth, and the life, living a true life, casting out evil, healing the sick, and preaching the gospel of truth. These are the ends of Christianity. This divine way impels a spiritualization of thought and method beyond doctrine and ritual.
Thank you.
That was good.
Yeah.
And she also says in Miscellaneous Writings and Questions and Answers, there's a question, if God does not recognize matter, how did Jesus, who was the way, the truth, and the life, cognize it? And just in a few things she says, his earthly mission was to translate substance into its original meaning, mind. His triumph over the grave was an everlasting victory for life. It demonstrated the lifelessness of matter and the power and permanence of spirit. If you will admit with me that matter is neither substance, intelligence, nor life, you may have all that is left of it, and you will have touched the hem of the garment of Jesus' idea of matter. Christ was the way, since life and truth were the way that gave us, through a human person, a spiritual revelation of man's possible earthly development.
Thank you. That's beautiful. I love that. You can have all what's left of it. It goes along with the scientific statement of being. It's very, very powerful. Yeah. And so many times when people ask me questions, and now I'm just referring it back to Mrs. Eddy. She answers everything. And if you haven't studied Prose Works or Science and Health, you need to. It answers all the questions, everything. I don't know if there's one that she doesn't answer, right?
Yeah. Actually, I think people go all over the place trying to look for answers, and every single thing is in that Prose Work. It's quite remarkable.
It is.
And some might say that it's, well, that's to Mrs. Eddy, that's truth. You know, it's truth to Mrs. Eddy. She wrote the book because it's true. And first of all, she wasn't the author of it. God was. But because it's true, it was revealed to her to reveal to all mankind. But it was never had anything to do with Mrs. Eddy personally. You know, she wasn't. And I think that's what's so wonderful about our textbook is it. Why would she have to study her own textbook? If I don't know how many people who write textbooks study their own textbook. They think they know it all.
Yeah.
But it's God who wrote it. So she had to study it as well as everybody else.
Yeah, and that's the approach we all should take to it. It's God speaking to us directly. And also that is why we identify her as the woman in the apocalypse. She wasn't just some nice writing a book. No, this is God's word, just as the farewell discourse was God's word to us, so is this.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. I never thought of it that way, especially at the beginning. She teaches us that she used miscellaneous writings for teaching, right? Was
the, yeah, prose works was for teaching and science and mm-hmm. prose.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll go on to question three. So Jesus said, I am the true vine, ye are the branches. So how does one be a branch of the true vine? Or you could phrase that as, what does it mean to be a branch of the true vine?
Well, I'm not sure. Like, I thought that it was maybe like the sun and its rays, like it's all one, but with different offices.
Well, again, he uses the word I here. I am the true vine. This is not just a personal person, Jesus. This is the Christ speaking. Mm-hmm. The divine manifestation of God to man speaking as the vine. The branch, you know, the branch receives all of its nourishment and life from the vine. Without the vine, the branch really can't exist. Without God, we cannot exist.
Right.
Without Christ, we do not exist. So how do you be the branch? Well, you be what the image and likeness of God. You acknowledge that you have no life, truth, intelligence, or substance other than God. Obey the rules that God gave us. I mean, he gave us the Ten Commandments, and he gave us the Beatitudes. I think those are the only rules we ever need to follow.
You're right.
And he has examples. Somebody mentioned, you know, he gave an example of what it was going to be like, what it's like to be his disciples. Mm-hmm. He washed their feet. His example was, you're here to serve. That's what we're here, just to serve God, to love one another. And that's how one will know that you are my disciples. Because you love God, you love one another, and you love all mankind. That's what's going to set you apart from the rest of the world and be a branch.
Live as I have done. You know, I gave you the example, so live as I have done. I think that's it.
Mm-hmm. For me, I think also letting them know, yes, I am the truth. But my branches, which means for me, and it's just reassuring them that the connection they have with him, in case if they're wondering.
Thank you. Good.
Exactly.
And when the centurion came to Jesus and said, I'm a man under authority, Jesus really praised his faith. So I feel like being the branch is just understanding that you're under authority. You know, mm-hmm. you're just a part of that process. So.
And that takes what we talk about often, humility.
Yeah.
Is once you think you're doing, you're no longer the branch. You're not. You're separated.
You're the vine and you're not.
Yeah.
I had an experience one time that I'd like to share. I was having a terrible time with a bad attitude about all that we're learning to some degree and whether or not I could do it. And feeling that I just couldn't feel God's presence. And I had some work to do in the yard, and one of them was trimming this vine that we had on the fence, and it had grown out of control. And as I went out there, I had to take a ladder to do it. It was a pretty good sized vine. As I started to do the project, and you can't trim a vine without a lot of attention and work. It's a lot of detail. Every single time you have to look at a branch and make a decision between this little branch and that little branch, this little branch and that little branch, going forward through the whole mass. And as I did that, my heart just like started to melt as I realized God has to be present with me. Look how much work it is to make these decisions, how much love is is involved in making every single little decision about, yes, this one stays, that one goes, this one stays, that one goes. There's no shortcut to it. And it melted my heart so much, I was bawling through the entire project.
because I just started to feel that presence making those decisions all the time.
Thank
that
you.
Mind loving every corner.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I don't know how relevant this is, but when I was reading this question, I was thinking about the tree and the branches. I was thinking this way: when a tree bears fruit, the fruit usually come out from the branches. Mm-hmm. And Christ referring his disciples as branches, to me, it seems like he was telling them, you are the one who is going to go out there and bear fruit for me.
Thank you.
Everything I have taught you, everything you have learned from me.
Exactly right. Heart. Absolutely. You cannot bear the fruit on your own. The whole thing is our total dependency on the vine. You cannot do it. It's nothing you can go out and think you can do. You have to abide. That's why that word abide in me, we use it a lot, dwell. I say stay in the Father's house. It's the only way you can do anything. Only through him. Mm-hmm. Well, through him you can do everything, but without that you can't do a thing. And the fruits of the Spirit, that's what the fruits of the Spirit are. They come from abiding. It's the Christ that gives the fruits. You don't go out and try to be what all the list is. You can't do it on your own, just as Andrea, I think, was saying. You can't do it yourself.
Sure.
So believe me, I tried for a long time and fell on my face regularly. So you cannot do it. Only God does it. And that's what... Go ahead.
I think it makes the vision of the sun and its rays very clear. And without the sun, where would be the shining of the rays? None. So absolute dependency on God.
Yes.
I'd like to share another thing I've learned since I've come to this church. That whenever I have those doubts of that, you know, it, these thoughts come that you can't hear God or you don't know him. I think about that in that it says we're hid with Christ in God. And in previous Bible studies and roundtables, I think Florence has said, you know, you don't continue to say, I can't hear God. You say, I can hear God. I'm his child. And I've applied that to that idea that I do know the way. I have to know the way. That has to be part of the complete package of life that God is expressing, that I can hear him, that I do know him, and I do know the way.
Very good.
Yep. Those are the little foxes that spoil the vine.
And if you argue for the positive, you will eventually experience it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Something that Mrs. Evans taught us, I remember, when somebody says, I can't, but they're really saying is, I don't want to.
Yeah.
When God made us to hear his voice.
You can't forget, we live, move, and have our being in him. So, you know, where else but from him? That's it.
Right. Thank you. So about the branches, so Jesus goes on to say, for without me, ye can do nothing, yeah. Which kind of leads us into our last question. Because if we can't do anything without Jesus, well, then we must be together in some way. So the last question is, what is oneness? So there's a prayer he does in John chapter 17, verses 20 to 23. If you want to refer to that. I know Mary talked about the oneness at the beginning. So I think that the oneness is really kind of the topic of today's Bible study.
Thank you.
And
yes.
It's unbelievable. Oh, sorry.
I'll just guess.
Well, I was just going to say that is one of the things that since coming to Plainfield, I'm just in awe that that sense of oneness was never stressed in my teaching, in my growing up, in the until coming here was that really stressed, and it wasn't really a concept that was. And I'm just so grateful that God brought me here to learn about this. It's so, so important that there's no personal I, that we are God's concept of himself. God, man is what God knows about himself. I mean, we're so inseparable from him. And that's what Jesus that was his whole teaching, is that we are all one with the Father. And like we're taught here, there's only one mind. Start the day, there's only one mind. God is my mind. God is the only mind. God is my life. It's just remarkable that until coming here, that was not stressed in my teaching. It's wonderful that it is here. And I'm so grateful because it's changed so much for me.
Well, it's changed for all of us. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
There is a very prevalent false belief that God is somehow outside of us, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes far away, but somehow separate from who and what I am. But you're right. The oneness is the unbroken, eternal relationship between principle and the manifestation of that principle. And the principle happens to be God. And the manifestation of that principle happens to be you, man. And that is the oneness that is the basis for everything. Everything that we are, everything that we experience, everything that we have or think we have. And then the wonderful thing about that is the result of that oneness with the Father, with God, is that all of the manifestations of that principle are in harmony with one another. All men are brothers and sisters as a result of their oneness with God. That is why when we put our family members under the control of our relationship with God instead of some human relationship, our relationships with one another blossom. And they lose all of the drama, human drama, of so-called, you know, human family. Same thing, you know, in our jobs, in our businesses, in our schools, in our churches, in every kind of relationship that we have with one another. If God is at the center of it and in control of it, it will blossom. If not, well, it's going to be, you know, it's not going to be fun all the time.
Mrs. Eddy says we have an indissoluble connection with our God. That's a pretty cool statement.
You know, is that a lot of churches, I mean, I've been to a few churches, a lot of churches read the Bible, don't read this passage, I believe. But what surprises me is that only Christian science actually teaches God oneness with man, oneness with God. Not just in the teaching, it teaches you in a practical way how to express it.
Yeah, because old theology tells you God is somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in school growing up in the Methodist for years. You know, that God is somewhere in the sky. Thinking about it now, I feel so stupid believing something like that.
Humanly organized religion has to make a separation. Otherwise, there's no place for them,
yeah,
and there's nowhere for them to have power. lost, you know. Yeah. Which is the wonderful thing about Christian Science is that nobody's trying to do that if they're really studying Christian Science.
Well, Our Father, which art in heaven, where is heaven, for heaven's sake, right?
Well, I must say, even after we know about this oneness and we study it and we practice it, it is a 24/7 thing to keep yourself on top of that. I mean, it's just, it really is, it has to be constant. And it's the hardest thing in the world when you're in the world, you know? So that's why we have to come out and be separate, and you have to give up things that aren't important, and yet the world tells us that they are important. So it's a real it's a blessing is what it is, and it's a joy, and but it's not easy, and nothing worthwhile ever is, I suppose.
That's a big challenge, to give up unimportant things, but yet so necessary. People get so hung up on the things that they feel like they want to have, they want to do, and it becomes important to them. But if it's not from God, it creates problems.
So. But really, when as you go forward, you know, finding yourself in God or being the reflection, as you say, those things that you thought you couldn't do without, they do fall away. They do.
Yeah, they sure do.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, the idea of reflection means so much to me, because when Mrs. Eddy said, you know, reflection and the principle must be one, well, principle and idea one. So when you're a reflection of something, you can't be separate from that thing, that principle. It's impossible. Reflection and the principle are one. They're not two.
Thank you.
That helped me.
Can I just read one little thing from Addresses by Martha Wilcox? She has a short chapter called I Am. And I found this the other day, and it was so helpful to me. Somebody mentioned that sometimes they don't feel. They'll say the words, but they're not really feeling it. And she says here, it is divine mind, the only I am, consciously being himself as real man. It is never we as person who says God is the only power, the only life, the only presence. It is always the I am, and never the personal I that declares power and life and presence and declares being it. I found that really helpful the other day.
Thank you. Yeah, and Tom started out with that article, Oneness, by Big Young, which is, that's sort of what got him the idea of this whole Bible study. And in what he quoted in there, Big Young says that Jesus washed away the belief that they were human beings. Gosh, that was his disciples. Mm-hmm. And I remember the first time I read that article, Oneness, that was such a cowabunga moment for me. And I know it is all in science now, because all the chapter about atonement, but when Big Del Young says, we know that we are good because God is the only good. We know we are intelligent because God is the only intelligence. We are harmonious because God is the only harmony. We are the very presence of these things. We no longer feel that our demonstration lies in an appeal to a power outside of ourselves to do this or that, but that we are the very presence of these things, even the presence of something that may seem to be lacking. That is, oh man, did that ever change it? It's sort of what Benji was saying. We're taught we're separate somehow, or even the you have a mediator, you have someone you have to talk to get close to God. And it's not even being this close to God. You are the very presence of those things. That's the oneness. And when you declare it and know it, you are it. And great things can be done through you, through the Christ operating in you. It's just, it's so wonderful. And I often think to myself, if you ever feel depressed or sick or whatever, the only feeling you should have is that your oneness with God. You should be feeling your oneness with God. And if you get back to feeling your oneness with God, your depression, your sickness, your whatever else will go. Because when you're one with God, you have complete health, complete joy, all good things, complete supply, everything. How could you not? You're one with that infinite source of being. And thank God for Mrs. Eddy teaching us this.
Amen.
Amen.
So I do want to say that when I grew up, occasionally I'd be given an article written by Bicknell Young, but was always told to keep it a secret or not tell people I read it. And, you know, so there's this sort of underground literature being passed around in fear of what the Mother Church might do if you read it. And to that, you know, the Mother Church has a write-up of Bicknell Young's writings and saying that he did not want anybody to read anything that he wrote, you know. So in essence, all his writings are suppressed, and the Mother Church doesn't want you to read his stuff. So I would just want to mention about how the freedom we have at this church, that we can read these things, that we're not suffering under authorized literature. And this article, Oneness by Bicknell Young, is just absolutely wonderful and beautiful. So I hope everybody reads it.
Thank you.
It really is. And I think it's beautiful, Gary, reading it, and you see how many views it has, because it's just so wonderful. It shows, to me, it shows God's allness, and that allness includes me. And that is just amazing. It gives a very, very special feeling of belonging. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know what Bicknell Young might have said years ago, does that apply now? Let me tell you, I had a conversation with him the other night, and he said, Mary, go ahead. All these articles I want. So who's going to deny that really happened? Are you going to tell me that didn't? I don't know. We can go round and around with this stuff. But all I know is so many people have been healed by a lot of this suppressed literature. So therefore, how can it be bad to get it out? How can that be wrong? I can't see how it could ever be wrong. So,
where would we be if Jesus told his disciples, keep this a secret?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Or John, you didn't copy that exactly right. You put a dot and it should have been an A, so don't put that in the Bible, whatever you do. I mean, I'm just...
And, you know, maybe to kind of affirm that, you know, what Bicknell Young wrote was something we should be reading, right? If you think about it, I read something that was written by someone who's not a Christian Scientist, Barnes Notes, you know, about the farewell discourse and the importance of it. And then I also read what Bicknell Young wrote about how we should really read those chapters. And then Violet Hayes' hymn or poem, you know, about the oneness, you know. So this is a message that needs to get out there about the oneness from the prayer Jesus did in the farewell discourse, and then what Violet Hayes is writing about and Bicknell Young is writing about and other people are writing about. And we should not suppress this concept of oneness.
Thank you.
We should celebrate it.
Thank you. Yeah. And Tom was divinely inspired for all of this. The oneness, the hymn, it all came to him from God, inspiration, to get this message that has been suppressed for so many years out. We do it individually. We do it collectively. It has tremendous power.
I'd like to add what you just said, Mary, that I think that this suppression of the oneness is, it goes back to why Jesus was even crucified, honestly. It's been a long time problem. That was the thing that infuriated the Pharisees and the Sadducees the most, was that he was making himself one with God. It's been a long time problem.
That's very true. Yes,
right, right. It was their pride, envy, jealousy, all of those bad human traits that always try to crucify the truth.
And suppress it, hide it, and keep it from the people.
Right. I mean, even if Paul wouldn't have come along, I'm not sure we would even know Christianity, because the disciples were so busy trying to make it acceptable or accepted in the Jewish faith that that was their world. I'm not sure it would have gotten outside of that if it wouldn't have been for Paul.
Thank you. Yeah.
You know, thank you for that. That's such a beautiful thing when you talked about the trial and how they were angry at what Jesus was saying.
Yeah, it's a big point.
That's a really nice perspective. Thank you.
Yeah. Mm. Well, that's why Mrs. Eddy has so much respect for Paul, I'm sure.
Yeah, Jesus had to actually approach Paul outside of the time he spent on earth and bring him in to work for him. And he was kind of an irritation to the apostles even. They didn't want to call him an apostle. And that same thing has happened, it seems like, over and over again with the message. Even Mrs. Eddy, the Christian faith, didn't want to accept her and put her outside of it. Christ has had to do his approaching from the outside of all the organized religion.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, indeed.
Including the Christian Science Organization.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, can I say, from personal experience, when you first came into Christian Science, your first encounter would be this topic, oneness with God. This is the first element, possibly from the first sentence that I read about Christian Science. I discovered my oneness with Christ, with God. But what is even more interesting is, years have passed by and I continue to learn. I found that everything about Christian Science evolves around this one topic. I mean, this is all you have to know. This is all you have to hold on to. And everything else.
Thank you. That's very true.
Mm-hmm.
So very, very true.
Right. And mortal beliefs will rebel against it. So get ready. Get used to it.
Well, because the serpent always hates the truth, right? And so we're made to feel like this oneness, we can't even speak it because it's just so outrageous. And I also wanted to thank the Plainfield Church for putting out these writings. That article, you could work with it every day of your life. You could work with one sentence and just try to live it all day. It's just so awesome to have that available. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, you're welcome.
Well, hopefully we all have gained a tiny bit of comfort, or maybe a lot of comfort. As Jesus said, let not your heart be troubled.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
Yeah, thanks so much,
Tom. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Thank you for this day.
Yes.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.